Yes, I'm hearing. Any remembrances? Yesterday was about Smarana, so you better remember something. So yesterday, what did we do? I think we finished verse 7, and then we entered in verse 8. We did 7 and 8 yesterday. Wow. Yes, what was it about? Vladimir? Okay, we should not only serve Krishna externally, but the main job is that our mind should think of Krishna. We have to train the mind to think of Krishna. Yes, very important. Yes?
One should hear and chant in the mood of Braja.
One should hear and chant in the mood of Braja or the Brajvasis. Yes? Yes? Okay, Anudina, one who constantly chants. So in order to constantly chant, the mind has to be pacified. So this means that the passion and ignorance has been cleared out, because they are the culprits to disturb the mind. So, and then there is Nishtita Bhakti. Yes, we said that this verse 7, it's talking of Anartha Nivritti, the clearing of a disease. And this disease is especially cleared when one endeavors to be steady in the practice. And when the disease is kind of cleared to a great extent, then it's easy to be steady. Yes, someone else? Shagun? Okay, this is the hope verse that we are diseased and the disease can be cured. Yes. Yes, Rajesh?
We have to train our minds that we can think of Krishna or the family person at the moment of death, whatever we think we can get.
Okay, so one of the good reasons to train the mind to think of Krishna is in preparation for death, because whatever we think of at the time of death, that will determine our next destination. Yes. Sankirtan? Tishtam Vraje.
Does it mean that physical present in Vrindavan, living any other place, is it that the mind follows?
Okay. Tishtam Vraje mostly means one should reside in Raj, and especially the consciousness, the mind, the remembrance, that should be in Braj. The body, maybe in Braj, or maybe in New York City. But the mind has to be in Braj. What is this practice? Tishtam Vraje. It is a practice, so it is part of what, this practice? Raganuga Sadhana. Yes. Of course, as Vedi Bhaktas, we can also remember the Haridam. But for Raganuga Bhakti, this is a prerequisite, that one should be situated in Braj. The mind should always hover around Vrindavan, be situated in Vrindavan. And in that situation, one should remember who? The Brajvasis, we said. Eh? The eternal associate of Krishna, not the Rikshawala. Unless he is, of course, descending from the spiritual world. Yes? Asamdi Balimini?
Vrindavan is an atmosphere.
Vrindavan is an atmosphere. What atmosphere is it?
Remember
and what is the atmosphere of Vrindavan?
Madhurya Prema.
Madhurya, yeah, Madhurya Prema. That's the atmosphere of Vrindavan. There is Madhurya Prema, sweet love. Sweet love, sweetness in the atmosphere. It's all Krishna-centered. Everyone is Krishna-centered. And it's full of sweetness. And one more thing. As I said, Krishna-centered, that also implies serving. Yeah. This offering oneself, constantly serving. So this is the mood, this is the atmosphere of Vrindavan. You can perceive it even now in this Vrindavan, especially in the night. 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock at night, what happens in Vrindavan? You can hear, you know, some staunch sadhakas are doing parikrama in the middle of the night. And the 24-hour kirtan parties are singing in the middle of the night. Then you can perceive, oh wow, this is so transcendental. So it is there, and that sweetness is there when you go to the temples. And everyone comes to Vrindavan and they wear a t-shirt. You know, I lost my heart in Vrindavan. On the outer part of Vrindavan, it is a covering. There's a film-like covering over Vrindavan. And unfortunately, that's what we perceive. We perceive the covering. And it stinks, and it's loud, and it's busy, and all this, right? And in spite of all these external inconveniences, you want to come back to Vrindavan. Why is that? Because the soul, deep, deep, deep inside, is experiencing something here. Yes? What else? Anandamayi? Okay, so our responsibility is to create a positive, favorable atmosphere for sadhana, for ourselves and especially for others, which involves that we shouldn't disturb others when they are doing sadhana, kirtan, all these things. We should not disturb, because you have to understand that each and every sadhaka is actually struggling to come to the point of sitting down and chanting japa. And on top of it, we go there and we say, and we disturb them. Already it took so much endeavor to sit down and chant. And then, you know, some so-called friend comes and says, get up, something to do. So create a favorable atmosphere. This is one of the purposes of ISKCON, as Srila Prabhupada explains it in the Upadeshamrita. We must create an atmosphere, a situation, which is that will draw the people to do, to chant japa, kirtan, think of Krishna. Yes. What else?
Chaitanya Charitamrita says that the neophyte devotee can excel if we can stay with the process of chanting, listening to the pastimes of the Lord form qualities.
Yes.
If you keep doing it, you can outgrow about
the neophyte. Okay, so the progress, again, he's talking about, we can progress from the neophyte platform to the topmost platform. What is the main practice for this progress?
Chanting
the holy name of Krishna. Which kind of chanting?
Attentive and careful.
Attentive, careful, and this includes offenseless. That's what is careful. It's offenseless. We have to chant, and avoiding the offenses, then the progress will take place. What else?
And once we
know,
once the devotee has two forms.
Oh, an advanced devotee has two forms. Sadhaka Rupa and Siddha Rupa. And a less advanced devotee, I always joke, has three forms. You know what is the third form? That is Bhoga Rupa. The less advanced devotee is not always a sadhaka. And he comes down from that platform a couple of times and suddenly you find him with pants and shirt sitting in the restaurant and trying to figure what's vegetarian on the menu. So there is a Bhoga Rupa, that's what the form of the people. They don't have sadhaka rupa, they have Bhoga Rupa. It's the form of their enjoyment, their enjoying spirit. They are dressed the way they like, they are dressed for show, for fashion, all for enjoyment, 10 pairs of shoes and so on, all these things are going on, and makeup and hairdos and so many wonderful things, you know, and enjoying all the different things. That's why many times when you come in the beginning, you know, and we tell you that please wear dhoti, kurta, sari. Why? This is your sadhaka rupa. Take it like that. This is your sadhaka rupa. It is true. Krishna gave this dress, so we develop this sadhaka rupa. So, otherwise, we wear whatever we like, whatever we please. This is bhoga rupa. So it is an austerity, actually, to wear the dress that Prabhupada gave. It's not so easy. In the winter, you wear the dhoti and the cold air is passing through. You know? In the summer, for the ladies, you have to wear all these piles of sari dress. Like it's very hot. And so when you step on it in the beginning, when you start wearing those things, you step on them. It's funny, right? Sometimes you see in the temple devotees are dancing, and suddenly somebody is losing the dhoti, comes out from the back and it's all gone, you know. So it is an austerity to wear this dress. But what form is this? Sadhaka rupa. You must take it like this. Don't believe this is just an Indian dress. Nowadays people think like, we want Krishna consciousness, but not all these Indian things. Which is understandable, it's clear, but when it comes to the dress, it's not just an Indian dress. It is sadhaka rupa. It's the form of a sadhaka that Prabhupada carefully gave us. So, and this is meant to enhance our awareness of our spiritual identity, enhance our remembrance of who we are. You know, when you wear the devotional dress, it's also a protection. You wear tilak, you wear a devotional dress, it's not so easy to enter into a karmi restaurant to eat some nonsense. If you don't wear that dress, then who knows? Nobody knows. So you can go anywhere. Even disco you can go. But if you wear the sadhaka rupa, then how you will go to these places? No? So it is a protection to have us remain fixed in your sadhana. You remain fixed as a devotee. So therefore it is important. Yeah. Any last point? So this verse 7 was about the purification that takes place and how also, we studied, was it in text 7? 7, no, yeah. Always think of the Lord and so on. So this was the purification, nishta, then ruchi will come. And then verse 8 was about raganuga bhakti. When one has been purified by the process of vaidhi bhakti, regulated practice of the regulative principles of devotional service, then some attraction, raga, some spontaneity comes through. No need to push yourself. No need for anybody to push you. I remember when I was first in the ashram, at 4 o'clock, was it 4 o'clock in the morning? No, 3 I think. At 3 o'clock in the morning, the Sankirtan leader, the person who was in charge of the ashram, she would come and we were all sleeping nicely, 3 o'clock in the morning, and she would turn the light on and she would say, Mangal Aarti! It was a typical such ashram, you know. They said they don't exist anymore, I hope. It was a typical such ashram, and every day was just like land, you know, from the dream world. I'm like, oh my God, what's happening? And then everybody would go, and you know. But why she was doing that? She could have done it in a more discreet, nice way. But the idea was that if you don't wake up the young devotees in the morning, they're not going to get up. You know, some of them will not get up. So in the beginning, we have to force, we have to push, we have to... It is said in the nectar of devotion, the impetus for practice is external. Why you practice? Because somebody is dragging you, pushing you. You want to do it, but there is resistance inside because of the tamas, rajas, all the conditioning that you have. So it's not easy to get up, it's not easy to chant, it's not easy to do the service. So therefore, there is external impetus, which is accepted voluntarily. Please wake me up. Please, please, you know, make sure I don't fall asleep when I chant. Please, like that. Devotees help each other in that way. But as we advance further, then it is more spontaneous. Nobody has to tell you, chant your rounds. You know, you want to. You feel like. You know, as soon as you open your eyes, you remember Krishna. And you know you have only one duty, is to chant his name. So it becomes very spontaneous. So, should we go to the next verse? Oh, we had something to explain from verse number 8. Okay, let me see. 76 for those who have the same type of book. Okay. So what is explained here is Raganuga Sadhana. Has been explained. Raganuga Sadhana. Because Raganuga is also a sadhana. Means those who practice this Raganuga Bhakti, it is part of sadhana. There are two parts we said in Bhakti, sadhana and sadhya. There is practice and there is perfection. So for the devotees who aspire to enter the realm of Golok Vrindavan and Madhurya Prem, this Raganuga Bhakti Sadhana is very much part of the way. In the Nectar of Devotion you will study that those who rather aspire to go to Vaikuntha, for them Vedi Sadhana Bhakti is proper. By following all the rules and regulations and so on, one may be elevated to Vaikuntha. But to enter the sweet realm of Golok Vrindavan, one has to mold one's consciousness further and actually develop a personal relationship with Adi Purusha, Govinda. We have to develop a personal relationship with him. And the way to do that is to learn from those who have a relationship. The eternal associates of the Lord have a relationship with Him. So we learn from them. We see what they are doing, how they are serving, how they are behaving, what is their mood, internal mood of service. And one tries to emulate that, but not imitate. Okay? Not imitate. And especially not imitate on the external platform. One day I was talking of the devotee who was practicing being a peacock. There are some sects of Vaishnavas, so-called, in Daiga, that actually practice externally. Like the male sadhakas are practicing the gopi mood. And how do they practice it? They wear saris, you know, they behave like gopis in the material body. So that is never meant like this. This is bogus. Because our service and our relationship with Krishna, eternal relationship, is not through this material body. And it has nothing to do with this material body. Huh? A male sadhaka may have a gopi siddharupa, And a female sadhaka may have a gopa siddharupa. This is not connected to the gross body. And so we have this kind of bhakti, raganga bhakti, is beyond the bodily concept of life. First you understand I'm not this body, and then we can develop further the moods of the soul. So here, raganga sadhana bhakti, which is practiced by those elevated devotees. Srila Prabhupada is, I told you, he's explaining this in several places, including the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 7th canto. Prahlad is explaining this Navavida Bhakti, and Prabhupada is commenting on this. So in the verse here, we'll read it, in the neophyte stage, one should always engage in hearing Krishna Katha. So this is good for Vedi Bhaktas and also for the Raganuga Bhaktas. Initially, what is the base of everything?
Hearing.
It's hearing. Tatrinu, Krishna says, chapter 7. Bas, finished. No Ashtanga Yoga, no Karma Yoga, no this yoga, no that yoga. What you should do now?
Hear.
Hear, and hear means accept the descending process. You become a beggar and you accept your position of dependence on the Lord, on the Supreme, and you accept this descending process, the mercy of the Lord. So this is the first step in all practices. It is hearing. This is called Shravana Dasha. Sharandasha, the stage of hearing. Just hear. By constantly hearing the transcendental holy name of Krishna and hearing of his transcendental form, qualities and pastimes, one can attain to the stage of acceptance called Varana Dasha. So what is happening here? Initially we just hear. We hear, we hear, we hear. And you know what happens when we hear initially? It's like with japa. It's like with everything we do. We are hearing, but the mind is not fixed. Right. You are hearing, but you are remembering, oh gosh, I wonder where I put my keys. Something is going on during the hearing. So here it says that from this stage of hearing, you have to go to the stage of constant hearing. What is constant hearing?
Focused.
You hear more time, and also it is focused. Focused hearing. So this is called advancement in hearing. And this is also connected to chanting, right? Because what are you hearing? One thing, you are hearing Krishna Katha. So that means others are speaking, you are hearing Krishna Katha. But the other thing we hear is the holy name. And who is chanting? I am chanting, or I am hearing the holy name that's coming out from my own mouth. So this is the progress. In hearing chanting, it becomes constant, very focused. I mean, remember, this is an advanced devotee who is already in the mode of goodness. And that leads one to the stage of acceptance called Varana Dasha. When one attains this stage, he becomes attached to the hearing of Krishna Katha. So in other words, Varana Dasha means hearing with attachment or taste. And what is happening actually is that hearing, 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 hearing the holy name and hearing, hearing, one actually begins to understand the, let's say, the flavor, the mellow of one's relationship with Krishna. One will find more taste naturally in hearing, for example, all the Vatsalya Lila. Krishna is a small toddler, and you know, he's got a little pearl on his nose, and he has these little feet, pinkish, and he's messing around in the cow dung. And so some people hearing, they start feeling for that personality. Some other person will hear of Krishna going out in the forest of Vrindavan. Krishna is blowing his bugle. And he's calling out the cows in the forest of Vrindavan, in the path. And all the cowboys are running around, and they are all playing on their flutes. They take the leaves, some kind of leaves, and they put the leaves in their mouth, and they make all kinds of sounds. And then they pick the green hard fruit from the trees, and they start throwing them at each other. Then they jump into the Yamuna, and then they fight. They have water fight, and then they come out, and they wrestle, and Krishna loses. They throw him to the ground. Then he has to carry them on his shoulders as a punishment. So somebody hearing this is starting to feel this kind of relationship with Krishna. Wow, this is... But it's not superficial. Remember, it is prema. It is a flavor of attachment to the Lord. You can observe your own relationship. What is love? It characterizes, we know, it's an activity, we love people, but it is also accompanied by a feeling in the heart, a kind of warmth, very positive, relaxed warmth in the heart. So when you are with your dad, you feel one kind of warmth in your heart, right? And when you are with your brother or sister, you also love, but it's not the same, isn't it? It's another kind of relationship, and it's prem also, but it's different. And then if you have a husband, wife, then again there is prem, but it's very different. And it manifests differently in terms of the activities that you can do with those persons. You don't do the same things with your father that you do with your brother. You don't do the same. So, hearing the pastimes, you start feeling that kind of warmth, which is of a specific color. Actually, the rasas have colors. They have been described as having color. And then another one will hear the gopis' exchanges with Krishna in the rasa dance. And that person will start feeling that amazing sweetness emanating from these pastimes. And then, so this is called Shravan, Varana Dasha, in which the sadhaka kind of accepts a type of flavor in his relationship with Krishna. He has no idea whether it's really that, or he has no idea who he is. He hasn't seen Krishna. But he feels attracted. So, what that person does, it says, hearing with attachment of or taste. So, he continues to hear. But instead of hearing everything about Krishna, how he was crawling in the cow dung, how he was playing with the cowboys, how he was playing with Yashoda, how he was playing with the gopis. Instead of hearing all this, he will hear those particular pastimes that his heart is feeling for. So he'll keep hearing. Suppose he is a Sakha or in Sakha Bhav, so he will just hear and relish with lots of taste all the stories of Krishna with the Sakhas. And if he is in Madhurya Bhav, he will hear all the stories of Krishna with the gopis and find it so beautiful, so soothing to the heart. It's like getting closer to home. Getting closer to home. So this is called this Varandasha. And usually, the devotee is supposed to confirm this with his spiritual master. So, and then there is, then Prabhupada continues here. When one is able to chant in ecstasy, he attains the stage of Smaranavastha. Smaranavastha, the stage of remembering. So this is the third stage. What was the first one? Shravandasha. Or Shravanavastha. Shravandasha. You just hear and hear and hear, very focused. You hear, hear. And then something will click. This is Varana Dasha, that you start hearing and perceiving the sweetness, different kinds of sweetness in the different pastimes, and you feel attracted to one of the sweetness. And when this is there, then the next stage is, third stage is Smaran Avastha, which means that you are remembering. Remembering. And this is the main sadhana of the Raghunga Bhaktas. It's remembering Krishna, because this is a goal of our life. We forgot him. Now we want to remember him. So the hearing continues with specific passages that one likes to hear. We have the example of who was hearing specific passages? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was hearing specific verses, specific passages, which would awaken his ecstasy. So, and as one, so one hears, and as one hears, it is connected, we hear this, it is from Shravanam, Kirtanam, and then Smaranam. So here there is hearing, and Prabhupada says, then chanting in ecstasy. You hear, and it creates so much taste. Then you chant with so much taste, ecstasy. And this leads to the next stage, which is Smaranam. Smaranam, a very elevated, one of the very elevated stages of sadhana bhakti, of bhakti in general, of sadhana bhakti. And what it means, this happens to us sometimes when you go to a katha, if the kathakar is very, very good, you hear the pastimes, and what happens at the same time in your mind? You see. So this is something, not exactly that, but it's the same. He's hearing, and then some deep remembrance comes of Krishna. He's meditating, he sees the form, the sound. It is Nama, Rupa, Guna, Lila, Dhamma. Everything is contained in the sound, in the holy name, and in the katha. So first you hear, it is sound, shravan, you hear, and you chant. And then the form appears within the heart as you hear. And the sadhaka focuses, tries to see, he focuses on whatever forms are being generated from the hearing. But this manifestation only appears when the mirror of the heart, you know, it is said it's a mirror, because you can see things inside. When it is clean, on the clean mirror of the heart of the advanced sadhaka, these images appear as he hears, and he's meditating on these pastimes. So this is the first stage of Smaranavastha, the stage of remembering. And then Srila Prabhupada says, recollection, absorption, meditation, constant remembrance, and trance are the five items of progressive Krishna Smarana. In other words, Smaran Dasha is the third stage, and it is divided into five. There are five layers of increased meditation on Krishna. And so he is giving here the English words here. And the first one is called Smarana Avasa. The first phase is called Smarana Avasa, which is recollection. In the beginning, one recollects, one tries to remember, but it is interrupted. Sometimes the pastimes manifest, like you can see, and sometimes it's not there. Sometimes it's there. It's like broken meditation, if you want. It's interrupted in the beginning. Srila Prabhupada says here, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he says, according to different relationships and mellows, there are five kinds of remembering. These are as follows. Number one, which is this one, recollection. Conducting research into the worship of a particular form of the Lord. So he's trying to see, he's trying to understand how to see the form, and he's hearing and chanting and hearing and chanting, and sometimes he sees the pastime, and sometimes he doesn't see the remembrance. He gets an interrupted remembrance. Then after that, there is and Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining the details of how this all happens in Bhajan Rahasya. Beads in hand. It's not that he's facing out mentally somewhere. He's chanting with full concentration. And within the mind, remembrance is coming. Then the second phase of Smarandasha, Prabhupada calls it here absorption. Which means it's called dharana. It's also in Ashtanga Yoga, dharana, which means uninterrupted recollection. It's concentrating the mind on one subject without withdrawing all the activities of thinking, feeling, willing, any attention to other objects. One becomes focused within. You hear the holy name, and the holy name manifests various remembrances. Prabhupada explains this. He says, concentrating the mind on one subject and withdrawing the mind's activities of thinking, feeling, and willing from all other subjects. Then the third layer or phase of Smarandasha is dhyana or meditation. Prabhupada calls it here in the NOD, NOI, meditation. Concentrating upon a particular form of the Lord. This is called meditation. So, somehow there is a remembrance of a specific form that one is connected to, which involves, you know, different features of Krishna. Then the fourth phase of Smarandasha is Anusmriti. Anusmriti. Concentrating concentrating one's mind continuously on the form of the Lord. This is called Dhruvanusmriti or perfect meditation. So, meaning it becomes more and more and more focused. Then the last stage is called Samadhi. We have heard this word before. And Prabhupada calls it in the Bhagavatam awakening a likening for concentration upon a particular form. This is called samadhi or trance. In other words, initially one has to endeavor to focus and then focus more and more and keep the mind from going away anywhere and stay there. But in samadhi, no need of effort. The mind has entered a zone, or the consciousness has entered a zone from which it does not depart. it has found a completely comfortable place. But one does not depart. One is, there is no more in samadhi, there is no more perception of the external world at all. There's no, the senses are withdrawn. And of course the thoughts and all are completely, the mind is unagitated, it's completely peaceful. They say like the light, the candle light in a windless place. No movements of the mind. No remembrance of one's own self, only remembrance of Krishna. No moving here and there. This is called trance, in which one is completely oblivious. So, and one is just hearing, because remember, the chanting of Hare Krishna continues. Of course, at some point it becomes internalized. But the Maha Mantra is continuing and the sadhaka is pursuing the sound, and meditating on whatever forms, pastimes of the Lord are manifesting on their own. So here Prabhupada says, at first remembrance of Krishna may be interrupted at intervals. This is recollection. But later remembrance proceeds uninterrupted. This is absorption. When remembrance is uninterrupted, it becomes concentrated and is called meditation. When meditation expands and becomes constant, it is called anusmriti. Constant remembrance. By uninterrupted and unceasing anusmriti, one enters the stage of samadhi or spiritual trance. After smarandasha or samadhi has fully developed, now you would say, oh, we have reached, samadhi is the goal, but no. This was the third stage. Shravandasha, varandasha, smarandasha, which is in five layers, five phases. The next, there is a fourth stage, which is apana dasha. By uninterrupted and unceasing anusmriti, one enters the stage of samadhi or spiritual trance. After smarandasha or samadhi has fully developed, the soul comes to understand his original constitutional position. So up to that point you are doing sadhana, like you are practicing hearing, practicing remembering, then entering samadhi. And after entering samadhi, then one day there is what we call revelation. So this means the sadhaka has reached the level of bhava, completely freed from all the three modes of material nature. He enters the nirguna platform in samadhi, and then there is revelation. What is the revelation? Means who am I? Wow. Who am I? Not this so-so dasi from this world, but who am I truly? What is my eternal identity? So, his original constitutional position. At that time, he can perfectly and clearly understand his eternal relationship with Krishna. So who am I? And initially he had understood. Because you see, already we understood that he understood what kind of relationship. He had understood, for example, I am a beloved of Krishna in the mood of the gopis. I feel like this for Krishna. I feel that sweetness. But I don't know which gopi. I don't know who I am. I know this is my feeling for Krishna. But at this stage of apana dasha, this is also called swarup siddhi, obtaining one's swarup, siddha deha. So it is the swarup siddhi. You realize your internal form. So now not only you know I love Krishna in this madhurya bhava, but my name is this is who I am.
Wow.
I've gone back. I'm returning. So there is remembrance. There is remembrance. This is called uninterrupted manifestation of one's swarup. This is also called prapti dasha. And one recognizes oneself as a specific individual in relationship to Krishna. Then Prabhupada says, so this is Aparadasa, it's Swarup Siddhi, I understand who I am. And then he has merged two Srila Prabhupada. The soul comes to understand his original constitutional position. At that time he can perfectly and clearly understand his eternal relationship with Krishna. That is called Sampati Dasha, the perfection of life. Actually this is the fifth stage. First there is Swarup Siddhi, which is Aparna Dasha. And the fifth stage, one comes to understand who I am, but one is still in the material world. It is, and the next stage is Sampati Dasha. Sampati means inheritance. You get your inheritance, which is permanent reinstatement in one's service, eternal service. This is also called Vastu Siddhi. Vastu Siddhi. So it is difficult to understand because we don't have experience of these stages. Yes. Sampati. Being reinstated in one's service. You see, it means you come in touch with the spiritual world. As I said, at some point, one will be guided by unembodied beings. The beings of the spiritual world, the eternal associates of the Lord. And they will introduce us back to our service, take us by the hand and say, you see the tree there? See the flowers? Go pick them. So these are the activities. We are reinstated, we are engaged. It's one thing to say who I am such and such. Next thing is, what do I do? So one will be guided to understand one's eternal service. And the six Goswamis, in general, unless one is an eternal associate of Krishna who has descended to the material world, like the six Goswamis, like especially Rupa Goswami, Sanatana, they came from the spiritual world. Okay, they are manjaris, they came. So they were experiencing this Sampati Dasha while in their material body. They were picking the flowers for Radharani. You remember the story of Rupa Goswami one time? He offended. He offended one crooked, person who was not walking properly, was passing, and Rupa Goswami was deep in meditation. And he was in his transcendental body somewhere, and he was witnessing some things, and some things became funny, so he started laughing, and somehow this laughter manifested in his gross body. And at that time one person who couldn't walk properly was passing by, and what did he think? That he's laughing at me. So the six Goswamis, or the Goswamis, especially Rupa and Sanatana, they had this capacity of being here and there at the same time. Raghunath Das also. He was drinking, so he turned so much sweet rice. He became sick in his physical body after eating so much sweet rice in his transcendental body. So it's difficult to understand. But the associates of the Lord, they can be here and there at the same time, experiencing prema. But the general people, they will realize up to Swarup Siddhi. Means you come to understand who you are. And when you come to the level of prema, the intensity of what is experienced is so strong that it completely destroys the material body. It devastates the material body, and one, the soul departs and enters the spiritual world. So for general people who have a regular body, you know, one does not usually, is not usually there and here. One is here, and when one one becomes completely perfected like this, it discards the body and goes back. Cannot manage both. Because you can see the state of Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri, what was happening to him when he was experiencing Bala. His body was a complete mess. The life airs and everything, it was like going against the laws of material nature. The arms were shrink, and you know, he was sometimes looked like a ball, and it was actually affecting all the constitution of the gross body. And because he was the Supreme Personality of God, and he could bear with it. But a regular soul and body, it disconnects. And of course, Srila Prabhupada also told us that when we become eligible to enter Krishna's pastimes, we take a last birth in that universe where Krishna has descended. And there we associate with the transcendental associates of the Lord. This is what some of the gopis were doing when Krishna was here. They were learning from the transcendental associates. And we hear also that they didn't go to the rasa dance with their material bodies. They went with their spiritual bodies. Okay, enough? Yes?
So our effort is to hear and chant attentively, the rest is reviewed.
Yes. She says our effort is to hear and chant attentively and the rest will be revealed. That's what Prabhupada said in the beginning. We know ourselves, avoid offenses, keep good association, and learn how to hear concentratedly. You know, and extra if you can. But you must also serve, because the service, the service helps us curb, you know, this enjoying mood that we have. So you must serve, hear, chant, hear very well, learn how to hear. This is the secret. Whether you are hearing holy name or you are hearing the katha, just hear properly. Yes? The Goswamis, they were in Sampati Dasha. Yes, they were in Prem Bhakti. Yes. He is teaching us, no? He is teaching us. Yes?
The definition of Srila Prabhupada about samadhi?
Trance, it's another word. Enter in trance, meaning you're not here. Yeah. Absorb somewhere else. So, if somebody wants a copy, I have a little chart of this thing here. You can understand. It's good. See, the Upadeshamrita, as I said, the last verses are difficult for the regular sadhanas. Sadhakas, and as you say, what do I do with it now? I just hear and chant, right? Yes, that's correct. You hear and chant, because this is where we are now. But it is information, so that we are not blind sheep. We know where we are going. There are many other stages of internal development of Krishna Bhakti. So we have been given a glimpse in this purport of a sadhana that doesn't belong to our level, but which we should not be surprised if one day after some time, you know, we start feeling something, we should understand, oh, this is what I read in Nature of Instruction. Who said Prabhupada didn't say everything? Yes?
Uh-huh.
Yes, Shantarasai. It is said Shantarasai in the Golok Dham doesn't exist really in its pure form. It's always mixed with some of the other rasas. But even in Shantarasa, when it has a little mixing with some other rasas, it's also something. It's just that there is no, in Shantarasa, there is no so much initiative. There is some feeling and some desire to serve. But there's no, like the trees, you know, they are hoping that one day Krishna is going to pass by here. You know, and they are crying in separation. Whereas the Sakas, the Sakis, they make a plan how to get him. It's different. No. Yeah, because these are the active rasas in Golok Dham. We know Shanta, the situation of Shanta is more in the Brahmajyoti. But the situation of Shanta rasa is also described in the Nectar of Devotion in relation to the vegetal life, the trees. The trees are in Shanta rasa, the hills are in Shanta rasa, the rivers are in Shanta rasa. But in Golok, it's always mixed with somebody. Like the Yamuna River is in Shantarasa plus. She's in Madhurya Bhav, yes. So like that. Giriraj, it's also depending on the times maybe, but Giriraj is considered to be Shant and Sakya. He's a friend. Acts as a friend. So like that, there's a mixture. The flute is Shant, but it can go into Madhurya, huh? Or Sakya. So like that, it is mixed. One more question. Yes? Yes?
But we should not imitate this session externally.
No.
So how can we imitate internally?
Okay, we should not imitate externally. Yeah, Prabhupada gave an example that in some places I have seen in New York, I don't know, Govinda Vasya must have seen, one time I was in that area where Prabhupada used to preach, you know, and I was walking in the street and it's all like, you know, New York people, all kinds of people. And then suddenly I see some young man with a shika. So I tell my friend, I said, look, some devotees. And she said, no, this is not devotees. They are not devotees. And I said, well, they have a shika. And he said, yeah, here many people have a shika. Because this is the birthplace of the Hare Krishna movement. You know, people are wearing, but they are not devotees. But it's like imitating or some kind of fashion or something. So we don't imitate externally. How to imitate internally? Well, you know, decide to just sit and hear, and once in a while go and buy chocolate, and then hear, and once in a while, you know, go smoke a cigarette. When you can't hear anyone, then hear. Like this, when the heart is not purified, and you try to do this kind of sadhana, that is imitation. Usually, these kind of things, what we should understand, if they are called spontaneous. They will. What is spontaneous? It happens by itself. So imitating means you try to force it through. You try. Let's try to hear. I'm sure I'm in Sakyaras. Let's hear all the 15th chapter of the 10th canto. I'm sure. You know, this is artificial. And we say it's like something they say, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, you know. So it's the same. Is when you are on that stage, you just experience those things. It comes automatically. So if it doesn't come, means we are not on that stage. And we keep with our Vedi Bhakti and we try our best to hear and chant. So certain things happen spontaneously. You cannot be attached to all your family and at the same time practice Raganuga Bhakti. Doesn't work. One who does this has no more attachments because he's not the body. He got it in a realized way that I'm not this body. So there's nothing like the mummy, daddy, and the wife, and the husband, and the kids, and all this. It's gone. These are external. You know, the relationship is no more the same. So when one is fully detached, then he can, you know, these kind of spontaneous things will happen in general. But by mercy, that's another thing you will study in lecture on devotion. By some special mercy, sometimes somebody who is still attached, who still has some material mind, will experience something. How? By association with the Bhava-Bhakta. By association with the Bhava-Bhakta. Because the Bhava-Bhakta is full of Bhava inside. And when he opens his heart, there are rays. You heard of the rays of Bhava, the sun of Prema? The rays of Bhava emanate from the heart of the Bhava-Bhakta. And they touch the heart of the people around. And by that touch, even a conditioned person can feel something for Krishna, can experience something transcendental, ananda, and some special taste, some special remembrance. In the lecture of devotion, you will study that part. Then it can go two ways. It says if you experience this, you should try to cultivate it. And when you experience something like this, usually it will cut the attachments if they are still there. So one should try to cultivate it. But unless one is humble, it will not happen. So let us go to the next here. What is happening next? You remember verses 9, 10, 11, they are like one kind of group of verses. We had 1 to 7. Is the sadhana bhakti, vedi bhakti, you know. And 8 is raganuga bhakti. And 9, 10, 11, in one sense, they are still meant to clarify the practice of raganuga bhakti. And they also open our eyes onto the realm of prema bhakti, bhava and prema bhakti. So let us read the verse 9.
Vaikuntha janito vana madhukuri tatra virasotsava vrindaranya udara pani ramana tatra vigohana radha kunja nihami gokula pache prema vita plavana kuya
This is called Sardula Vikrita. It's a specific type of meter. Yes, very beautiful, very long. So let us read. Sardula Vikridita. Shardula Vikridita. Now, the instruction you remember in verse 8? Tishtham Brajeta Danugami Sananugami. What was the first thing? Tishtham Vraje. One should live in Braj. So here he is explaining why live in Braj and what is Braj. And what are the different places in Braj? Where is the best place to reside in Braj? He's clarifying this Tishthan Braje. The holy place known as Mathura is spiritually superior to Vaikuntha, the transcendental world. Why is that? Because the Lord appeared there. Superior to Mathura Puri is the transcendental forest of Vrindavan. Why? Because of Krishna's rasa lila pastimes. And superior to the forest of Vrindavan is Govardhan here. For it was raised by the divine hand of Sri Krishna and was the site of his various loving pastimes. And, above all, the super excellent Sri Radha Kund stands supreme. Why? For it is overflooded with the ambrosial nectarian prema of the Lord of Gokul, Sri Krishna. Where, then, is that intelligent person who is unwilling to serve this divine Radha Kund, which is situated at the foot of Govardhan Hill? Nobody gets up, okay? We're not going to Radha Kund. So, what is Rupa Goswami doing here? We have heard that he's clarifying his Tishthanvaji. We should reside in Braj. So what is Braj? And he's giving us a hierarchy. A hierarchy of places. So, what is the... Now these are very high places. So what is the first level? Vaikuntha. So Vaikuntha means beyond the material world. And Vaikuntha here refers to the spiritual world in general. Prabhupada says the spiritual world is 3/4 of the total creation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it is the most exalted region. And it is naturally superior to the material world. Where did you hear this before? In Bhagavad Gita? Tripad Vibhuti and Ekapad Vibhuti. The manifestation of Krishna's opulence, 3/4 of the opulence is in Vaikuntha, or the spiritual world, and 1/4 is in the material world. There are many beautiful places in the material world, but they cannot compare to the opulence of the spiritual world. The opulence, as we know, in knowledge, in beauty. So the Vaikuntha is usually considered beyond the material world, and it's considered that it is superior to all the places in the material world. In the 5th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we are taken on a tour of the material world. And there are such amazing places, Mount Meru, wow, you know, and the rivers of mango juice flowing down, and the oceans of milk and the oceans of ghee, and all the divine, not divine, but heavenly beings with all their heavenly bodies, you know, that never sweat, that never go old, that never wrinkle, you know, that smell fantastic, ever young. So we take a tour of all these places in the material world, and it's almost like, wow, this looks like a nice place. So beautiful people, beautiful places, but the spiritual world is much higher than this, except for Mathura. Mathura is in the material world in one sense. It is manifest in the material world, but it is not a material place. This is what is being... Why Tishtan Raja? Because Braja is not a material place. It is the manifestation of the topmost spiritual location within the material world. It's actually part of the Tripad Vibhuti. It is part of the Tripad Vibhuti, but it is manifested here. And it is higher than Vaikuntha. Here the reason has been given because the Lord appeared there. The Lord appeared in Mathura. He descends. And he manifests himself in the material world. And that blesses that place so much that this place is considered higher than Vaikuntha. Also, we understand that Krishna, when he descends, is the original Purusha, who is higher, who is at the source of the Vaikuntha Narayan forms. The forms of the Lord in Vaikuntha are Chaturbhuja, four-handed Narayan. And we hear in Chaitanya Charitamrita the entire description how this Narayan form has expanded. It has expanded from something called the Chaturbhuja, a quadruple, a set of four forms of the Lord that are also four-handed. And this has expanded from another quadruple form. And this has expanded from Lord Balaram. And Lord Balaram has expanded from Krishna. But Krishna and Balaram, they are special forms. This is the very original form of the Lord, Sri Krishna. That form, that is called the original candle. You have one candle, and you take a candle which is switched off, you put it in contact with the first candle, and once you have two candles, you cannot really say which one was first. They look the same. So all the forms of the Lord, they are divine, full of powers. But our acharyas have said, but initially there is one candle. And through Guru Parampara, we come to know the name and the place of residence of that original candle. That is Govinda. He resides in his own abode. And from that abode, the other lokas have expanded. As the body of the Lord expands, his abode also expands. His energy is expanding. So, and this Mathurapuri and all this area of Braja, Mathura is within Braj, this is what is being described. So this whole area is actually an appearance of the topmost realm in the spiritual world. So therefore it is superior. It is superior to Vaikuntha. But then there are distinctions even within Braja. The first one we heard, there is Mathura, which is glorified because it is the place of appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Straight from Golokdha, he appears in this world. And his first appearance is in Mathura. Of course, we hear from Jiva Goswami that at the same time he appears in Mahavan, in Nanda's house. And then they merge together. But this form that appears in Mathura is Vasudev, which is higher than Narayana. It's a form. So then, superior to Mathura, Puri is the transcendental forest of Vrindavan. So particularly that forest of Vrindavan is reflecting Goloka. In Mathura Puri, and you should understand what is the gradation here. From Vaikuntha to Mathura, then there is this Vrindavan, which includes the 12 forests of Vrindavan. Madhuvan, Talavan, Kamyavan, Mahavan, all these 12 forests of Vrindavan are included here. And why are they famous? Because Krishna, he spent his childhood pastimes there, which are so, attractive. And especially so sweet. So the gradation here that is being, the superiority that we are talking about here, we should understand, it's a superiority according to sweetness and intimacy. In the Vaikuntha world, the relationship of the living entities with the Supreme Lord is full of Aishvarya. There is Aishvarya Bhav. There is, the Lord is full of Aishvarya. And our relationship has a kind of, awe. There is reverence. In Vaikuntha, everyone knows that Narayan is the Supreme. And as soon as they see him, what do? They bow down. They offer their respects. And what is the main rasa in Vaikuntha? Dasya. They all are the servants of Narayan. They are servants of Narayan. But in Mathura, we have Vasudev, Devaki, the ladies of Mathura and so on. What's happening with them? If we see Vasudeva and Devaki, on one hand they know that Krishna, who has appeared as their son, is God. Because they prayed for that. And the way he appeared, that wasn't a regular kid, okay? It was not. First there was all this light that came in the darkness of night at 12 o'clock. The room became filled like with 1,000 suns. Rays, effulgence of 1,000 sun. Vasudeva and Devaki was like this. They couldn't look at this effulgence. So something strange was happening. And in the middle of that effulgence, the effulgence kind of reduced in one little focused place, and it then appeared that form of Vasudeva with four arms. And he was blue in color. And he had long hair. And he had all these dazzling ornaments. You know? And so, and they understood. The relationship was there. They understood. Beta. It's our child. The relationship was there. It's our child. But at the same time, Om Namo Vasudevaya. They became struck with awe. They fell at his feet and they started offering prayers. Usually it's the kids who are supposed to offer prayers to their parents. But they bowed down and they offered prayers to Vasudeva. So there was that awe and reverence was there. But at the same time, after they offered their prayers, they became worried that Kamsa will kill you. Hide yourself. So he said, on one hand they felt awe and they felt he was superior to them and he had come to protect them. But on another hand, their consciousness was shifting from one to the next. They felt, no, he's our child and we are his parents. We must protect him. So this is the relationship in Mathura. There is awe and reverence and there is sweetness also. The sweetness of feeling the Lord is mine and he's under me. I have to protect him, I have to care for him. But when you go to Vrindavan, does Yashoda say any prayers to Krishna? No, she goes around with the rope, you know, the stick. And she's having the rope and the stick and she's running after him, and if I catch you, you're going to get it. You know, because you're too naughty. You've broken all the pots, given the yogurt to the monkeys. So there is no awe and reverence. And therefore it is considered superior. Because this is according to the desire of the Lord. What does the Lord want? Why did he expand into all these forms all the way down to us, the jivas? It is to experience relationships. And the more intimate the relationship, the more it is creating happiness. The more it is relishable. Superficial relationships are not interesting. But intimate relationship, when the heart, the lotus of the heart opens, and there is a connection, very intimate connection with the person. And you don't have to play the boss all the time. Krishna doesn't want to play God. He wants to play with friends. So this is superior. Because all these sweet pastimes, including the rasa dance, all these sweet pastimes have happened there. So he says, thus the interior Vrindavan forest is considered superior to Mathura. But superior to this forest is the divine Govardhan hill, because Krishna lifted it. Oh, what an intimate connection. He lifted Govardhan, and two things are said. he held it like an umbrella, raising it with his lotus-like beautiful hand to protect his associate, the denizens of Braj. But it is also at Govardhan Hill that Krishna tends the cows with his cowherd friends. And there also he had his rendezvous with his most beloved Sri Radha and engaged in loving pastimes with her. So Govardhan is a spot for very intimate pastimes, both with the Sakas and with the Sakis. In the caves of Govardhan, under the trees of Govardhan, the Sakas are massaging Krishna's feet while he is sitting in the cool under the trees. They are singing songs. They are bringing water from the waterfall. And they are massaging his feet. And sometimes, you know what? Krishna is massaging the feet of Balaram. That's very nice. Then everybody sits around and they all want to be part of that. They all want to help. They also want to massage. They also want to be the one who sings. They want to be. So what happens at that time? Krishna expands in so many forms. And so many boys are making the beds of petals from flowers. So many boys are singing. So many boys are sitting and giving their leg as a pillow. So nice. Very intimate pastimes. Hide and seek. And with the gopis, they are playing in Mansi Ganga. They go on a boat ride and Krishna is disguised as a boatman. And in the middle, by his mystic powers, he arranges for a storm. And all the gopis go like, oh, it's all dark, what are we going to do? And then he shakes the boat, creates some waves, and they're all like so scared. And Krishna says, oh, the boat is too heavy, too heavy. Throw away all your jewelry. Oh, what will our mother say? Well, you want to be saved or not? So they throw away all the jewelry, all the pots, all the yogurt, everything. And he's laughing. He's just laughing. So these are like, they play. What do we do in the spiritual world? We don't go to the factory. We play all day long. We play. And it's full of magic. Very magic. So therefore, this Govardhan, which is also praised as the greatest devotee of Krishna because he provides so much. He serves Krishna in Madhurya Bhav, Sakya Bhav, Vatsalya Bhav, Dasya Bhav, in all the different rasas he's serving. He's providing shade, he's providing water, he's providing juices, he's providing powders to decorate the forehead and the limbs of Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys. He's providing all these things. Cooling water. So, but then that's not all. Then Radha Kund at the foot of Govardhan is superior to all because it is there that love of Krishna overflows. So we know the pastimes in Radha Kund are only Madhurya. Sakas are not allowed. The gopis are guarding, chasing them away. Only Radha and the gopis. Engaging in beautiful loving pastimes, loving quarrels. And of all the rasas, each rasa allows a relationship which is increasingly sweet. So the sweetest rasa is Madhurya. And this, because it is the sweetest rasa and the topmost, Ujjwala rasa, it is the topmost rasa, revealed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You remember the preface? He came specifically to deliver Ujjwala rasa. This is what's happening now. He's explaining it. This is where you get it. It's in a place called Radhakund. This is where all the gopis meet. They have their kunjas, they are permanently of different colors in all the different around Radha Kund. there is Lalita Kunjan, there is Vishakha Kunjan, the Manjaris also have their little Kunjas. So many Kunjas around Radha Kunjan. And Krishna visits all of them. He's traveling from one to the next. And they serve him all kinds of drinks, all kinds of foods. They make all kinds of jokes. But these kind of pastimes are only understood by one whose heart is free from lust. Otherwise they think, oh, boys, girls. I wonder what they do in this kunja. It's not for us to wonder what they are doing in the kunjas. The main exchange is love. It's exchange of sweetness and service. So the topmost place is Radha Kunj because the most intimate pastimes are manifested in Radha Kunj. And because the relationship of Radha and Krishna became so intensified in Radha Kunj. Krishna, Radharani did not want to associate with Krishna because he had killed a bull. So then there's a whole pastime how he regained the favor. And this entails the creation of Shyamakund and Radhakund. And it is said that Radhakund, I think it's in the next verse, it is liquid prema. It's the form of the love of Radharani for Krishna. And the form of Krishna's love for Radha. These two kunds, they are melted love, melted prema. So this is Tishtan Vajay. Where to reside? On the banks of Radha Kunj, not in the water, on the banks of Radha Kunj. Who should reside there? Next Prabhupada says. Advanced devotees prefer to reside at Radha Kunj because this place is the site of many memories of the eternal loving affairs between Krishna and Radharani, known as Rati Vilas. The pastimes of intense love. Why is that place also so much important for us? And why is that instruction there to reside in Radha Kunj? So on one hand it has been explained from the transcendental point of view. It is the highest because it is the place of the highest, sweetest rasa. But another reason is given next. What is the reason? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself was looking for that place. When he went to Vrindavan, he was looking for one place. Which place? Radha Kunj. Who is he? He is Krishna in the mood of Radha. And in which mood is he? Separation. He was in separation. And he was searching for that place. And he found it in the middle of a rice paddy field. You know where they plant the rice? Lots of water. So in the middle of those paddy fields, he found a kund. Small. There were two kunds actually. What was their name? Cham and Gauri kund. So he found that place. He was searching. It's somewhere around Govardhan. He was doing the parikrama. He was searching. And finally, he found, and with his transcendental vision, he saw, oh, this is Radha Kunj. And immediately, what did he do? He offered his obeisances and immediately entered the water. And there he was in the middle of the paddy field, taking bath in great ecstasy, chanting, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And all the devotees wondering, what's happening now? He's bathing in the middle of the paddy field because they were used to his mad behavior all the time. So those who are very intimate, they always understood madness means ecstasy, means he's experiencing something extraordinary. And those who were a little bit like overlooking, they said, who is this madman? So he first visited the area of Rajabhumi. He could not at first find the location of Radha Kunj. This means that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was actually searching. And finally, he found the holy spot. He took his bath. And later, the pond was excavated by Lord Chaitanya's devotees because they valued it. Who excavated? Principally Raghunath Das Goswami. This was one of his main contributions. He excavated Vanakkund and built the first ghat around the Kund. Presently there is a large lake known as Radhakund there. Srila Rupa Goswami has given much stress to Radhakund because of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire to find it. So Mahaprabhu found the main place and he delegated finding the other place to Rupa, Sanatana and the Goswamis. This was one of their missions. Excavate the places of pastimes, the Leela stars. He found the first one, the main one, and then he said, you find the others. And on the spot where there is a Leela stan, you must build a temple or some, they build those, in Vrindavan you will find what they call Baitak. They build a kind of shrine, which is like a seat for Radha and Krishna. Usually the neophyte devotees, as soon as they see these seats, they go and sit on it to take a selfie. Yeah. It's not for that. Srila Rupa Goswami has given much stress because of Mahaprabhu. Who then would give up Radhakund and try to reside elsewhere? No person with transcendental intelligence would do so. Do we have transcendental intelligence? No. Okay. So, therefore we don't mind, you know, wherever. No, those who have transcendental intelligence, they focus on living in Radhakund. And again, how do we live in Vraj? It's either you can be physically present with the consciousness also there, or you can be physically somewhere else with the consciousness in where? In Radhakund. We found the spot now. It's not just Braja. It is Radhakund. So no person with transcendental intelligence would do so. It means that when our transcendental intelligence awakens, we will be naturally drawn to remembering those places. The importance of Radhakund, however, cannot be realized by other Vaishnava sampradayas. Nor can persons uninterested in the devotional service of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understand the spiritual importance and nature of Radhakund. So this is a specific gift of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's gift, as we know, is this prema bhakti in the mood of the gopis. This is what he came to give mankind. And in order to obtain that, what has to be done? What does it say there? Who cannot get it? Who does not understand the importance of Radhakund? Worshipping or? It doesn't say worshipping.
Serving.
One who does not serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order and mission? Please, wherever you are, wherever you go, you please distribute the holy name. This is his mission. So, in order to progress towards these transcendental stages of Krishna consciousness, we must be servants of Mahaprabhu. We must integrate ourselves within his mission. Take our little part there. Understand what we can do. Serve him. It is by serving him that the door will open to these higher stages of Krishna consciousness. Those who do not serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cannot appreciate. Thus, Radhakund is mainly worshipped by the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the followers of Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And especially by those who follow his followers, namely the six Goswamis. In the next verse, let us sing the next verse. We have some more. Yes. Yes.
So we're saying that Kulati Sampradaya is born in this Sampradaya. Kulati Sampradaya also they worship Radha. Maybe. So they know that they can answer. They also know that Martin, they know about the bodies of Radha. Is it the
It is specifically revealed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. See, in this Kali Yuga, the other sampradayas, although they are bona fide, but they don't really have a bearing. In this Kali Yuga, the Yuga Avatar or Avatari is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it is by following him that one gets the topmost aspect. Now, which sampradaya is that? Nimbarka, isn't it?
Yes.
That worships Radharani. And remember, if you study, you will see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he took two different principles from each of the four sampradayas. Understand, it is not 3 plus 1. It's 4 plus 1. Although the Gaudiyas are connected to the Madhva sampradaya, they are not really Madhvas. You can go to Udupi, you'll understand there's something kind of different. Although we are in the line of the Madhvas, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taken two principles from the Madhvas, two from the Ramanujas, two from the Nimbarkis, two from the followers of Vishnu Swami. Because all these sampradayas, they reveal the absolute truth. They all lead to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in different features. But they all lead there. And what Mahaprabhu did, he took the cream, the topmost instructions of these each sampradayas, and he preached that. Being based within the Madhva Sampradaya, he added elements from the other three sampradayas. He actually combined the three sampradayas. So the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, what we preach, is actually a combination of all the four sampradayas. He is the Supreme Personality of God. And so he knows, you know, how to guide the living entities to the topmost platform. So this is what he did. So yes, there is also the worship of Srimati Radharani in another sampradaya. But we don't say that they are not, you know, achieving their goal, because they worship Radharani, so they are achieving their goal. But here Srila Prabhupada is giving the focus, because we are followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We accept him. If someone in those sampradayas accept him, they will also understand the importance of Radha that he revealed. Understand, Radha Kund is for people who are ready to depart. Those living entities that have come to the point of ending the cycle of birth and death. They have come to that point. So those persons absorb themselves in remembrance of Madhurya Prem and Radha Kund. But we also heard that the Prem is in different rasas. So there are people who are more concerned with another rasa by nature. That's also okay. But those who are in Madhurya rasa, for them Radha Kund is the meditation. Because they want to reach those regions where those kind of rasa is there, that manifestation is there of that kind of relationship with the Supreme Lord. Another question somewhere? Yes, what? Yes? The Nimbarkis, they are preaching Brajabhati? Yes? And? Can you speak loud?
Sri Sampradaya,
yeah.
They don't have listeners leading.
No, they are not telling that much, and their object of worship is Lakshmi Narayan. Mm-hmm. And they chant Om Namo Narayanaya, which mantra, it's a mantra, and by chanting it, one does not really experience the sweetness. One experiences more dasya bhav, some kind of love for the Lord, but with reverence. Yes. No. Yes. Yes. Oh, so many questions. Okay, let's take Shubhankar. He's been waiting. Well, I do not know exactly, but one reason for sure we could say is that he thought that ISKCON devotees were not ready to live in Radhakund. They only made a nest there. They thought it was a beautiful swimming pool. That was their consciousness in the 70s, at least some of them, not everyone. But that's Prabhupada got reports and he got complaints from the local residents that these, you know, Mlecha Videshis, you know, they are there and they are doing deep diving and jumping and splashing and playing. That's what they were doing in Radhakund. Maybe they hadn't read the Nectar of Instruction. So, of course, Prabhupada was not going to establish. In fact, he forbade them to go. He said, no one can. He forbade the devotees at that time to take bath in Radhakund because they were not behaving properly. If you read, it's the topmost place in the universe. It is meant to be dealt with so carefully. And the first thing they go is like jump and, you know, catch their knees and fall into the water with their feet. It's very bad. So that's, I would say, why he did not, you know, establish ISKCON there for what? So, and it's not our mood also, what you will do in Radhakund. You preach to whom? The pigs? It's not a place really for preaching. Although nowadays, because of the tourism development and all that, everybody goes to Radhakund anyway, so you can still preach. But he established in Vrindavan, not in Radhakund. And he also said there is already a temple in Radhakund, which is the Goriamat. It's called, what is it called? It's Radhakund Goriamat, I think. So that,
there is
one
now, but not a
proper ground. Yeah. In due course of time, yeah, now we have an ISKCON property. There is the Gopal temple. Yes, see, he got his samadhi in Radhakund. So slowly, you know, and there are many devotees of ISKCON now staying in Radhakund. But unless one has advanced sufficiently and purified the heart and one is grounded in Prabhupada's instructions, to go to Radhakund is very mesmerizing because there are so many kinds of people staying there, including those who dress like gopis, and, including those who, you know, take bath three times in Radhakund and smoke pot in their ashram. All things are going on there. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was very critical of the people living in Radhakund and Prabhupada blasted them throughout his books many times. It's a dangerous place. It doesn't mean we cannot go. Of course, we must go to Radhakund. You can spend some time there, chant some rounds there. You can, of course. We go sometimes to Radhakund, but to reside there, it's not so easy. Already to reside in Vrindavan, I hope you discovered, it's not so easy. Yes?
Can we take the bath in Radhakund? Is it an offense to take bath in Radhakund?
It's not an offense to take bath in Radhakund, but you should be clear that your mind needs to be purified before you take bath in Radhakund. Like you may do Govardhan Parikrama and then bathe in Radhakund. You may chant 64 rounds and then bathe in Radhakund. It's not just a place that you feel hot, that's having bath. You know, it's not like that. That you just space out and somehow take bath, or you take bath because of you want something from Radha Kund, or, you know, all these people offering all these big pumpkins in Kartik in Radha Kund, the only thing they want is a sun, you know. So we should not go into taking bath in Radha Kund with material desires. With, if you read properly here, what it says in the end is that one who is in Bhav Bhakti, he takes bath every day in Radha Kund. But it doesn't mean it's forbidden in one sense, but it's according, you can follow your spiritual master, what he says. Srila Prabhupada apparently did not take bath in Radha Kund. When he went with the devotees, he sat on the steps with a lota. And he scooped the water and he took bath like that. That's what Prabhupada did, you know. So, but there are different things which are said about it. So you can choose, but the main thing is you should be in a kind of, in a transcendental day, you know. So you actually get some benefit bathing there. So it's not to be taken cheaply. That's the message. We will talk more about it because there's more verses coming about that. Yes, another one. What is that?
Is it the same as
No. No, Dwarka is not one. If you want, you can say a bit in the same group, but Dwarka is lower than Mathura. There is even less sweetness in Dwarka. You know, because in Mathura, at least Krishna is a young boy, you know. He manifests extraordinary pastimes, he kills Kamsa and all that, but he is with his parents, there is Vatsalya above and all that. But in Dwarka, he's a prince, he's ruling. So there is more, awe and reverence. Yes. There is more awe and reverence in Dwarka.
What about the Ayodhya,
that's below that. In order, there's Golok, Mathura, Dwarka, Ayodhya. It comes down. And this also depends on the expansions of Krishna which are there. So it's Vasudev in Mathura, and it's also Vasudev in Dwarka. But in Ayodhya, there is no Krishna, there is Ram. So that's a further expansion of the Lord. It's a partial manifestation of the Lord. And the relationships with Ram are very limited. It's very limited. It's definitely awe and reverence. And for example, Ram has ekapatni vrata, means he took a vow to accept only one wife. So the Madhurya rasa with Ram, it's for Sita. No one else. There is no Madhurya Rasa with Lord Ram. And what about friendship? There is no friendship with Ram. He's a king. There's no friendship with Ram. So it's very much Vaikuntha, similar to Vaikuntha. The only time when there is sweetness, extended sweetness in Ram's pastimes is when he is on Vas, when he is in the forest. When he is in the forest, the people are able to approach him more closely. They can feed him, serve him, you know. It's much closer when he is in the forest. But when he is in the palace, ruling, it is very restrictive. He is a monarch. So, but in Dwarka, there is friendship with Krishna. Arjuna is Krishna's friend. Uddhava is also having a very close relationship with Krishna. It's called the friendship with Krishna in those places is called Gaurava Sakya, which means Gaurava means some kind of reverence. So it is friendship filled with reverence. He's a friend, but you keep some distance. It's not like in Vrindavan that you jump on his shoulder. You don't do that in Dwarka. And in Dwarka, you see, he has 16,108 wives. So there is Madhurya Rasa in Dwarka, but not in Ayodhya. Okay, well, maybe I'll let you go and we finish the other two after lunch, isn't it? Otherwise you will be submerged. Haribol! Okay, well, I hope that you are appreciating this part of the lecture instruction. So we'll continue with the next two verses this afternoon. We are completing the book this afternoon. I hope you have read. The purports are short. The matter is intense. But the purports are short. So we'll finish the two verses this afternoon. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.